Hey, people, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast. I'm your host, Mick Raven. It is Sunday, the 18th of February, 2024. This is a review covering alternative news and events. You can call plus 61 02 8006 1918 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com, and get the D program. Now, podcast today, I'm going to do some updates on stuff I've spoken in the past, but just to bring things to the forefront. This is about PFAS, e-bikes, this sort of stuff. The sort of things that the globalists for their agenda need you to give up your private transport so they can monitor you easily. But yeah, so the e-bikes, EVs, all those sort of electrified stuff, it all gets monitored on the internet. That's the whole purpose of it. This is why a lot of businesses that used to use analog systems to track all their products and stuff like that, just on the same sort of level, it's all gone online so it can be micromanaged. That's the whole point. From anywhere in the world. That's another thing. So they're having a big discussion in the US at the moment about electrification because the Chinese run the lithium market. And they're worried that it's going to be national security. A bit like, if you remember Huawei, when they had the 5G network, they were worried that the Chinese could, the Communist Party could get information by, you know, putting in the infrastructure in the US and then tapping into it. And apparently the UK is full of Huawei, so we can imagine the Chinese having a field day with UK intelligence. But the US put a stop to that. That's what you've seen in the past, and Australia sort of did the same. But that's the beginning of it, when they all realise that once it's all interconnected, it's a free for all. So they but there's still an agenda. This is how you know something's not right, because they want it to happen, yet they know there'll be security issues, but they don't really care because it's going to be a one world government anyway, and police and army. One bank, one everything, just to run one currency, one nationality. The nationality will be a new world order, of course. And I'll probably start bringing in clones, because when you've got no culture and nationality, they don't need people that think. They don't want free thinkers. They want people that just do. A bit like a biological robot. So, yeah, the clones will come, people. They will start to allow. China already does all the splicing and trying to recreate different biologies, that's already been sort of talked about. Of course, the ethics have stopped the West from doing that. But eventually that will break down, people. As they start to move away from religion and ethics and morality, they'll start to move into a scientific future, which is really what is starting to happen. People are noticing that now, that everything has been scientifically based. Now, science means knowledge, and it can change. Even though I did the podcast last week on Michael E. Mann, the hockey stick graph genius to do with climate change, as a pun, by the way, he can be wrong too. It's because science is always proving and disproving all the time. Okay, so the science is done, apparently, but we'll see. Because when there's anomalies like chemtrails and weather weapons, well, you've got to put that in there too, Michael. You can't just not include those sort of things too, because then we start getting suspicious. But of course, they're never going to tell you that stuff exists, because that's the whole purpose of telling you the weather is changing, because it used to be global warming. So all the updates are always usually about the jigsaw pieces in the giant Agenda 21/30, which has now become Agenda 2050, is what they tell you. But they want it a lot sooner than that. They wanted it in 21. They wanted all the changes implemented then. This is to do with electric vehicles, that you were out of your internal combustion engines, you were doing all sorts of other banning on fishing, and all the cows, of course, get rid of the cows for the methane. In other words, they want to deplete the food supply. That's part of the agenda, because that's going to head towards depopulation. That's the main goal. Always remember, the main goal is that. They've already got as much moolah, as money, as they can ever have in their lifetime, so that's not the issue. They need to reduce the population so they don't have any challenges to their ideas, which is to control all of the planet, the rest of it. So the best way to do that is to clean it out. That's what they're doing, draining the swamp, as they sometimes call this. But in this case, it's not done with your permission. which is why I do the podcast, because they are going to do this without telling you. So all these little jigsaw pieces add up to that agenda. It's the best way to put it. When you're looking at PFAS and when you know they've poisoned the water for 80 years, they don't care. It's going to be bigger than asbestos and tobacco combined. So anyway, first up, what's going to be like a pilot program for e-bikes is in San Francisco at the moment. They're trialing, it's like a trial to see if e-bikes are better than cars or motorbikes or any other sort of transport. This is just for the food people. So we're talking like the, not so much the Ubers at this stage, but more like the other food deliveries like Deliveroo, all those sort of companies will start to look at e-bikes for delivery services instead of traditional motorbikes or cars. So it starts off with, and this is from sfenvironment.org, so obviously San Francisco Environment Department. Now, it came out last year, 28th of September 2023, but that's when this thing started. So it's got San Francisco e-bike delivery pilot program cycles into action to reduce emissions and ease traffic congestion. So you can see that this is going to tie in with the 20-minute cities, where they get rid of cars in the zone that you'll be living in, and they'll put all the shops in that area so you don't have to travel out of that area. And delivery drivers will probably be the only ones that can go through the zones. This is what they're going to do, people, when you lose the privacy of driving your own car. So it's got San Francisco, California. Today, the San Francisco Environment Department announced a launch of the second cohort of the city's new electric bikes, the e-bikes, delivery program to reduce emissions and traffic congestion. So actually, I'm wrong, because this is the second one. So they've obviously had one before that, but let me read on. We'll probably clarify it anyway. It says the program led by the SFE is intended to support mode shift by studying and observing the benefits of transitioning deliveries away from cars to more sustainable forms of transportation, like e-bikes. And you can see they're going to want to do this through the whole industry of everything, people. It says the innovative program is funded by a $2.4 million grant the SFE received from the California Energy Commission and is divided into two cohorts over the one-year program. So obviously it's a one-year program. I'll see when it actually started. Let me just look it up. One sec. Okay, so I found from the San Francisco Environment Department the e-bike delivery pilot where they're looking for drivers. And it says the program will launch in the spring of 2023, which is the US spring, and it will wrap up by the spring of 2024. So we're still a little while off just yet. But anyway, let me read on, and you can see what they're up to, because if they can prove that this is better for emissions, they're going to adopt it. It's as simple as that. It's going to be like a massive transition straight away from the petrol car to the electric vehicle, and people will jump on it, and they'll, and in the end they'll force you to do it. They'll say the emissions will be so expensive for a combustion engine that you'll have to flip it anyway. And it almost makes you think that, oh, can I just get my engine taken out and put a battery in? Not quite that simple. In fact, it's a completely different car. If they could do that, I think a lot of people would do it, actually, people. If you think about it, people would go, oh, I just want to do the right thing. But it's not. It's a totally different setup. It's more of like when you were a kid and you had a robot car, and it looked the shape of a car, but there was a big battery inside it and you had a remote control. It's like that, which is also what's dangerous, because the car can be remotely controlled while you're driving it. So these are the issues in the future that you'll have to contend with, as your car is taken over by a 10-year-old Chinese hacker and driven off the side of a cliff. Now, this is all hypothetical. I'm not saying that's what will happen, but I'm saying it's a probability as more of us transition to that. Because remember when cash was around, and that's another thing to talk about as well, the transition from cash, you were actually untraceable, and you were sort of, you couldn't be really bugged about it, because if you had cash in your wallet and you spent it, that was the end of it. But these days, because cash, it doesn't exist, we now have the problem that it's in the ether, which is why all the cyber criminals have grown intensely over the last decade. Well, it's going to be the same electric vehicles. They'll crime will then move into that, and you'll have the same sort of problem again. But that's where the future is taking us, to this online gridded matrix nightmare that people with open arms want it. So they're going to have to deal with the after effects as well. But in the agenda's idea, it's to make you think you're heading to this utopia, when in actual fact, it'll only be for a few that can do that. The rest of us will be on the electric buses, being completely tracked by the government, whoever in the day. And that's really what's going to happen. It's called micromanagement of the sheeple. That's what it is. Okay, so back to the pilot program, just so we can get back to it. Just so you know what they're up to. It says, and this is from the San Francisco Environment Department, our e-bike delivery pilot program is a key part of reducing traffic congestion and greenhouse gas emissions in our city, said the supervisor, Preston. The pilot's success to date and its expansion show that we can shift deliveries from cars to e-bikes. I appreciate the work of the San Francisco Environment and the LAFCO and look forward to continuing to expand these important efforts to shift deliveries to a more sustainable modes of transportation. So this is a pilot where they're going to trial till spring of this year in the US, and then they're going to make their case. And it'll be a pilot for all the other jurisdictions, and then, of course, that idea will move on to Australia as they try to sell us more and more e-bikes, which is why in Australia, you don't see the sort of safety programs that are supposed to be out there. You just see kids willy-nilly on an expensive e-bike just hurtling across the street, sometimes without helmets and sometimes doubling without helmets. And you're just waiting for the fatality, which, of course, they'll blame, if it's a car involved, on the car, not the e-bike. In other words, they're favouring the e-bike, and that's why they're not being prosecuted. They're all minors, so it's a grey area. I think I've got an actual article that someone handed to me. I'll just see if I can get it. One sec. I'm not sure if I've quoted this on the podcast before, but I'll just quote it again because it's about the rules. And it says here, and this is from Peninsula Living. I don't have a date on this, so I'm not sure. And I'll have to track down the actual article, but someone's handed me a photostated copy from a local Northern Beaches publication. And it's got Know Your E-Bike Rules. It says, earlier this year, so I assume it's this year, Council and the Northern Beaches Police Area Command audited use of e-bikes and scooters on footpaths. So they're obviously not looking at the ones that are scooting around on the road, but they look at the footpaths, fair enough. The audit found several safety issues, including speed, lack of helmets, and limited knowledge of New South Wales road rules among young riders, because they're not, it's not regulated and they don't have a license. Of course they don't know. It says, with e-bike, e-scooter and hoverboard use on the rise around the beaches this summer, councils have prepared a guide for users to safely navigate locally shared roads and paths. But most of them don't do it, people. I'm telling you, I've seen it just from where I'm working. I just see it as soon as the school bell goes at the school that's near us, bingo, off they go. And there's just e-scooters everywhere. And e-bikes, actually more e-bikes, sorry, all over the place. It says the handy tips include, I love this part, the common sense part, wear a helmet. It's a legal requirement for all bicycle riders, including those on e-bikes. So this is the grey area. It's really a motorbike. It's not really an e-bike. They just call it a bike, but it's really a motorbike without a motor. But the battery is so powerful, it's like a motor. And you know what's worse, people? You can't hear them. Now, a lot of people that live on main roads would say, oh, these e-cars and e-bikes, it's brilliant, can't hear them. But a pedestrian can't hear them either, and that's becoming a problem. And it will become a really big problem in the future when someone is hit, unawares, and probably killed. Okay, so it says, in New South Wales, all e-mobility devices, you know, the ones that the disabled people are using, except e-bikes are restricted to private property only. So e-bikes are not e-mobility devices, people. They're just private, let's get to A and B quicker. And they're actually not supposed to be on the roads or the footpaths. They're not supposed to be anywhere except on your private property. But that's not happening. It says it is illegal to ride e-scooters or hoverboards on the road or footpath, resulting in a $723 fine. Now, they didn't put e-bikes into that sentence, people. It says, know your e-bike speed limits. It says, exceeding the 25 kilometres. I've seen them going easily 60 k's, easy, along with other cars on the road, easy. So I don't know where that's coming in, but that's what you're supposed to be doing. 25 Ks, the speed limit without pedalling, makes them illegal. So they've got to do this illusion of pedalling so it looks like an extremely fast bike. It's just so ridiculous. But it's all to do with the agenda, people. That's why they're doing it. Okay, they're pushing that agenda, so they're not going to target these things because they want them on the roads before people go, oh, this is ridiculous. They want them on the roads so they can start cancelling out cars real quick. It says, all bicycles need a bell to prevent collisions. I have never heard any e-bike or an e-scooter with a bell. I've heard normal bikes that don't have batteries on them and scooters with no battery attached, they have the bells. But the rest, no. And it's interesting because the normal scooters and bikes are actually slower than the e-scooters and e-bikes, and they have a bell and the other ones do nothing. So it says, a bell to prevent collisions. Pedestrians first, slow down, ring the bell. There's no bell on them. And if they do, they never use them. It says, ride at safe speeds in public places. Well, in our local jurisdiction, where we have a Coles New World Order, that's what they call them, shopping centre, apparently this is indoors. Someone had an electric bike, this was witnessed, and slammed into a baby, a woman that was carrying a baby, and the woman chased after the e-bike. This is what actually happened. This is so dangerous. It's on the Northern Beaches, just not far from where I was told about this. So we'll see if the repercussions pop up with that one, but I still haven't heard anything yet. But there'll be a fatality soon. Then you will hear about it. And I love this part. Teach your child about the road and shared paths. So it's your responsibility, and you're the one that's going to get fined when they cause an accident that may be a fatality. It'll be the parents that pay the price. So that was from a local... And you can just see that it's not really adhered to. People listening to that would know that, watching the e-bikes. They're not obeying the rules at all. In fact, they're going the opposite way. It's more or less more a defiance of a you can't do anything when you catch me anyway thing. But eventually the parents will be fine. It's the parents who will wear it. So if you're a parent with an e-bike or an e-scooter rider, be prepared because you're the guinea pig in this whole experiment. Now, continuing the San Francisco pilot program with e-bikes, it says the one-year program, pilot program, will provide up to 30 San Francisco food delivery workers with e-bikes to use for making deliveries. The program will monitor the impact e-bikes have on delivery efficiency and worker revenue while assessing bike safety. The SFE will also use the program's metrics to understand the potential impact that e-bike delivery has to lessen traffic congestion. Also, remember the drivers are at risk here too. You hear about all these delivery drivers getting knocked over by cars. So this is the crossover period where they use 30 guinea pigs to fly through the traffic and see if it reduces emissions, which it obviously will. But the problem is it's going to create this, I can't hear the bike coming and someone's going to get killed. And they're just going to blame the car and try and force the cars off the road even quicker, people. But anyway, we'll wait and see if that happens. So it says, lessen traffic congestion, reduce transportation-related emissions. Ultimately, the program's findings could help make the economic and environmental case to shift food deliveries away from cars in favor of e-bikes. It says that the program is divided into two cohorts, with each cohort consisting of 15 e-bike riders and 15 drivers as a control group. The first cohort concluded its testing this month. It says this pilot program will help support our workers who want to transition from driving but can't afford an e-bike, said Supervisor Chan. I hope to see more programs and ensure our workers can afford the move to more sustainable modes of transportation. Well, I can tell you in Australia what's going to happen. Our Prime Minister has let 700,000 workers into Australia, and I don't know where they're from, but you can dare say that the majority might be from India. And the first thing they're going to do with them, because a lot of the drivers in Australia now are Indian, we're talking about delivery drivers, couriers, you would have noticed it. They're going to try and get them to transition from the food deliveries to the e-bike instead of a car. Like a car is probably like $5,000 to $10,000, maybe more to buy and then run, whereas an e-bike is probably about $1,000 to $2,000 and does the same thing. It delivers just a small package or whatever they got. Of course, it's not a big delivery driver where they've got like lots of orders, but it's something you can go back and forwards really quick to the to the point of contact where they can pick up the goods to take them, like a restaurant, wherever it is. But you can see that this is going to happen, people. That's really what I'm trying to say here. So it says, participants were chosen from a pool of applicants that applied this spring. They had to commit to delivering at least an average 20 hours a week from mobile food ordering platforms such as, these are the names I was trying to think of before, Grubhub, Uber Eats, DoorDash. I think Deliveroo is Australian, but it's the same thing, people. It's just these short-term delivery drivers with food. It says program participants received bike helmets, bike locks, bike bags, and training on how to safely use e-bikes. It says in return, participants will take surveys and participate in data collection to help the city understand their experience with e-bike deliveries. They will also get to keep their assigned e-bike and accessories, including a helmet, lock, and food delivery bag at the conclusion of the program. So, of course, they're all going to sign up for it. As many as want to do it will jump in. It says the data will be collected and analysed to compare outcomes for the e-bike riders cohort versus the car-based delivery workers control group. It's obvious who's going to win, people. SFE will assess metrics like earnings, trip origins and destinations, trip route, including miles and duration, and total work time, comparing active versus inactive miles. While data collection is ongoing, it will be compiled and then assessed once the second cohort is concluded early next year, which is this year. See, now what's really interesting, people, or actually it might be next year, sorry. What's really interesting is that the electric bikes won't be judged on their emissions, obviously. But a lot of electric, where you can get your electric vehicle charged, for the first 20 to 40 minutes in some of these stations, it's free. And then they charge you after that. So these short-term riders will not have that included in this comparison. But the petrol car ones will. So that's how they're going to win. It's not just on environment, it's going to be on costs. Of course, over 10 years, or even shorter for maybe an electric bike, the batteries die. What happens? Well, you don't really just replace it, because you're virtually buying another bike, because that's how much the batteries cost. They're actually, like an electric vehicle, the battery is about $10,000 to $15,000 just for the battery, without the car. Okay, so you've got to add that cost in. Electric bikes and scooters are the same. Their batteries almost cost more than what the vehicle itself costs, especially at that level. So over time, the batteries will die. Whereas in the car or the scooter that's propelled without a motor, they don't matter, obviously. It's mechanical. And with a car, it's the motor, mechanical. So as long as that can keep being repaired, depending on what the costs are, the car can virtually go on forever. Whereas the e-cars, once the battery dies, the car's useless. It's very hard to remove the battery, so people just get rid of them. So that's your lifespan. It's a short-term lifespan with a dead weight attached to it that you've got to then get rid of for recycling or whatever. This is the difference. They don't want you to have something long-term anymore, and they certainly don't want you to own one. So the idea is to make it too expensive to own e-bikes or e-cars or electric cars, and that means the majority of workers and people will be forced onto the public electrification system, which is obviously trains and buses, fully electrified by then, you know. So this is where they're trying to take this, and they need a test or a pilot to prove it, and this will probably do it. And people will go, well, let's go electric bike. And so you're going to see a lot more of these on the road very, very soon. And that's when the accidents will start. And they will blame the internal combustion engine from slamming into these devices. Because they're going to say, and see, these kids, they're not even trained on them. They don't have to get a license, people. It's not regulated. They just jump on it like their bike at home and off they go. Except these things are more powerful and they're on the road and they can keep up the speeds the same as a vehicle. Even though they're told to go slower, some of them can actually go quite fast, and I've seen it. So I just know that straight away they're on a dangerous situation where there are cars on the road, a lot of foreigners coming into the country that don't know the roads, and this is just a recipe for disaster waiting to happen. Absolutely. So just to finish it up, it just says, pilot programs like this are innovative ways to test new ideas that could lead to important change in how we operate a more sustainable food delivery economy. So just for this, said San Francisco Environment Department Director Tyrone Jew. We're hoping this pilot program and data collection can spur an industry-wide transition away from car-based deliveries in favour of climate-friendly e-bike-based deliveries. So that's a win-win. People go, well, why aren't we doing it? You don't understand what's coming, people, I can tell you. Over 40% of San Francisco carbon emissions come from fossil fuel vehicle operations. So they want 40% of those cars off the road, people. This program will provide crucial data on the feasibility of mode shift for transportation needs like delivery and logistics. As a transit-first city and with a goal of achieving 80% of trips through low-carbon modes of transportation, biking, walking, and mass transit, i.e. the electrified bus system, are essential strategies within the city's climate action plan to reduce emissions. Now, don't forget to people, the third world's been doing this forever, and you're going, what, with e-bikes? No, with bikes, with motorbikes. You go to anywhere in Asia and you'll see the Vespas everywhere. You go to India, Vespas everywhere. So the majority of the third world have already adapted this way of getting around and doing things. They just want you to do it now. That's the difference. So just to finish up again, specifically bikes and e-bikes are potentially game-changing modes of transportation that can improve air quality throughout the city. This is while the PFA is destroying the water supply, but that's another story in a minute. While reducing congestion and helping the city reach net zero emissions by 2040. So San Francisco's got 2040, people, not 2030. They've put it in between 2050 and 2030, and they've picked 2040. It's all fictitious. There's no target. They want you to do it now. And so it says, just to finish up, they've got an example. When I was delivering with a car, it only made sense for me to work at night because of issues with traffic and parking. That makes sense. I switched to a fixed gear bike because driving in the city was so difficult, said Salvador Martinez, a second cohort participant. This program is a blessing for me and I'm excited to be part of it. An e-bike is the perfect middle ground for this work. I can take more orders, go further and, wait for it people, exercise. I don't know where the exercising part is. Must be the fake pedaling. It says SFE has partnered with Grid Alternatives, the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition, and Driver's Seat to support and administer the program. The e-bike delivery pilot program's first cohort launched in the summer of 2023 and ran through to September 2023. So that was the first cohort. So it actually is finished because it was September. It says the second cohort has just begun and will run through to January 2024. So it must have just finished, people. It says this program was inspired by the San Francisco Local Agency Formation Commissions. And it says Emerging Mobility Labor Study. And it says SFE presented some of its first findings for the program at the LAFCO in September. So this must be, it must have finished up because it's February. So there must be an update soon. So I'm just going to see if I can find an update for February and just see if something's come of it. Because they're probably still collating the info. But I'm just going to see. So just to see if there is any more info from these people. Looks like there's an update. Don't know what date this is. Let me just click on the link. And it's the same. Oh, actually, here's another update. So it says, and this is to do with e-bike delivery pilot. It says the San Francisco Environment Department, this is also from the sfenvironment.org, so I'm not sure if it's an update or the same thing, is leading a pilot program to transition app-based delivery drivers to electric bikes. The one-year pilot program will provide 30 San Francisco food delivery drivers with e-bikes to use for making deliveries. The program will test the impact e-bikes have on delivery efficiency. It says the SFE will also assess bike safety. That's interesting, that one, and income. And it says the program's findings could help make the case to shift food deliveries from cars to e-bikes. The program will launch in spring 2023 and wrap up by spring 2024, which is what I was saying. So this is the criteria, just to wrap this up, so at least we understand, and I'll see if I can find out if it has wrapped up, because nothing came from that search just in. It just gave me this pilot program information. It says, be a San Francisco resident if you wanted to sign up, be at least 18 years of age, time of the program enrollment, be able to work as an app-based delivery worker for one or more food delivery services in San Francisco for at least 20 hours per week over a four-month period. And it says be able to take part in data collection and survey activities during a four-month period. See, These things, e-bikes, not so much the cars, but probably they are. They probably have a GPS in them. But the e-bikes are attached to the internet, people. So they can actually micromanage these drivers. It's something they need to realize as well. They will certainly be micromanaged. It says, have previous experience in riding bicycles in San Francisco. Have access to a smartphone. Have access to health insurance. And then you get to keep the e-bike. So, of course, everyone jumped in. Now, let's see if I can find if it's concluded, because it doesn't seem to say anything. So I'm going back to the original site and see what it says. Well, actually, before I go back to the site, I just realized it said spring. So I looked up spring in the US, California, it's in March. So we've got a few more weeks to go and then we'll have a conclusion. But that's why there was no finality to it. I thought it finished in February, but when I just kept reading it and saying spring, well, spring is actually March. So we've got to wait a few more weeks. But then that'll resolve and we'll be able to see how well that trial went. But we can all see which way it's going to head. I mean, you've got to understand the globalists hijacked the green movement years ago, decades ago. They knew that if they could get the youth on their side, they'd be able to protest their way through with all of their agendas. But what's the terrible part is the youth have no idea that they're being used. None of them. They all think that to save the planet, let's do the right thing and do this. But the lithium mining is actually far worse than coal. It's just not as visible with the tailpipe blowing smoke. The lithium powered car doesn't have any sort of emissions. So that's why they're going to win. But they're not going to win on the production of it, because the mining of it is just as bad as coal. In some cases, it's worse because they need cobalt. They need other sorts of minerals and things to go into the car that is not just petroleum. So this is where a lot of mining companies have been hijacked, and China has a stranglehold on the lithium market with the batteries and that. So this article here that I just found about US defense, of how they're worried about giving over to the Chinese, because, you know, that sort of fictitious thing's going on as well, but this is their argument. But still, the agenda is to make sure that you get out of your car and that you depopulate. If you keep those things in mind, then all of this adds up. Otherwise, I mean, these are the sort of arguments that are trying to stop the technologies getting through. So they're sort of slowing tactics, but they're not really going to stop it. This is a story from ZeroHedge.com. It's a site that I subscribe to. You should too. It's got a rushed electric vehicle approach will undermine national security. So this is for the US. This came out in the 10th of February 2024. It says, normally a new year brings a renewed focus on getting things done in Washington. But with Congress accomplishing little in 2023 and attentions now shifting to the November elections, it is more prudent than ever that the policy agenda of our nation's leaders, because it's a US article, people, reflect what's best for our collective future, not politics. And it says, take this administration's campaign to spread electric vehicle technologies. There is now no doubt that the EVs will be part of America's future, but decisions made by President Biden and his allies to incentivize and rush the adoption, that's a key word, people, rush the adoption of EVs into the American transportation sector will have unintended consequences, most unrecognized being the implications on our national security priorities. This is very interesting because they didn't want to use Huawei for the routers. These cars are like, you could say they're almost like a way in to the American networks, because they have devices that are on the network, but they could have back doors in them, just like the routers do with Huawei. It says, back in April, the Environmental Protection Agency introduced a rule that would regulate the tailpipe emissions of light, medium, and heavy-duty vehicles. So this is it. This is the start, people. So this has been going on for probably a year in the US, where it's got, they're regulating the emissions of light, medium, and heavy-duty vehicles. It says, the rule aims to have roughly two-thirds of automobiles sold in 2032 to be electric. However, and actually in Australia, just before I read on, they're talking about the same thing. They're saying that any new cars that are made, there is going to be emission requirements. So some major car companies are now thinking, well, we can't produce these type of cars anymore. That's what's actually starting to happen. Incredibly interesting. So it says, However, proponents of these types of heavy-handed government policies fail to account for the realities of the global EV market and, importantly, the dominance held by the Chinese. And you're going, what? For the last 15 years, China has solidified various investments within the electrical vehicle value chain, fortifying its position of power in this rapidly expanding market. China dominates the market for rare earth reserves, which is actually true, mineral extraction, and battery production, all true, people, all of which are an integral to the production of EVs. And while the US Geological Survey estimates China only has about 36% of the globe's rare earth reserves, it has come to control 70% of the world's extraction capability and nearly 77% of the world's battery manufacturing capacity. So you can see they would have the West by its proverbials, because it's almost like the Saudi Arabians with their oil. The same thing happened in the 70s. Everyone was tied to the Saudis. Well, now the Chinese want to be the new Saudis with the new oil. But the trick is, people, the lithium isn't in that country. The controlling manufacturing side of it is, but not the actual lithium. Have a guess where some of the most biggest deposits of lithium are in the world. Can hear a pin drop. Australia, correct. So this is why all eyes are on these sort of countries like ours from these superpowers. They want the resources, okay? So it says, it's this condition that makes a concerted push toward EVs risky, because clearly to get more electric vehicles, this is about America again, people, Americans will increase their reliance on China. It says, recently a letter consigned by me, this is the writer, and 16 other national security experts highlight these details and the associated risk that continued overexposure to China could mean for public health officials. It says the US automobile market will be inadvertently tied to Chinese interests, making prices and markets more susceptible to Chinese manipulation. So the article, the person writing the article, just so you know who it is, it's authored by James Marks via Rear Clear Wire. And I think that quote was from, I'm just going to find the quote. James Marks is a retired US Army Major General. So that's who the original story would have come from. And they've just spun it through other sites. But still, this is a dangerous precedent, people, because it means that national sovereignty is being eroded. And this is what I keep saying to you. The Chinese keep getting all of this surveillance, which means they're going to end up without, whether they like it or not, as the military police of the entire planet, because they'll be running all of those systems. So they're the first ones that know anything about all these sort of things. And the cars and your Internet of Things and all these devices will be sending information back to who? To them. So this is why they're trying to block it. But it's a really lackluster. You can see they're not following through. It's just more or less to make the public think that they've got national sovereignty. Whereas it's just unbelievable. So it says, reading on, it's got, recently a letter consigned by, this is the retired general, and 16 other national security experts highlighted these details and the associated risks that continued overexposure to China could mean for public officials. It says, for example, in October, China announced intentions to enforce export restrictions on graphite, a mineral that makes up the largest amount by volume and mass of an EV battery. So there you go. This is like what they did to Australia, where they restricted, they didn't want to buy wine anymore or beef and all that. And they more or less just starved us of the dollars that we would have got from them. Because a lot of companies in Australia rely on China. And so China just put the screws on. And they're doing it again by the sound of it. It says, the country has a history of weaponizing trade as a means to exert its power. As Colombia's Center on Global Energy Policy explained, the move was clearly part of China's broad strategy of flexing its economic muscle in response to escalating trade tensions with the United States. If we continue to push the status quo, Americans will more likely face a trade war with China rather than a fully integrated, electrified future. So this is the problem. All these lazy countries have now realized it's come back to bite them. Okay, but this is a new world order thing, people. It's not really us and them. They're all in on it together. We're the ones that they want to control, the average people. That's their targets. Okay, that's just like what's happening in Israel and Palestine, and I will talk about that tonight. The Palestinians are just numbers to be exploited. That's it, on both sides. So in other words, Israel, the US, even Russia, because October the 7th, when Hamas invaded, was actually Putin's 71st birthday. Exactly, and they said that that was a gift to him. So you start thinking, what's Putin got to do with that war? This is what I'm getting at. All of these integrated things that are happening, including Ukraine, are all part of an agenda to whittle down food and oil for heating and cooling for the general public. It's actually the public that suffer when all these things happen, not Putin, not Biden. None of these people suffer at all. In fact, to them, it's a chessboard game. To us, it's life and death. So that's what's happening in Palestine right now. But anyway, getting back to this story, I will come on to that, but I definitely want to talk about something to do with that tonight. It's got, instead of electrification strategies and regulations that will artificially increase EV demand, it says we need to ensure that domestic investment and infrastructure opportunities are our first priority. Well, that's too late. They've had China as slaves for over 50 years. I mean, they're not stupid. They worked out that, okay, here we are, we're the slaves, but not forever. You know, slave becomes master. So what they've done is learnt and copied, plagiarised and done everything they can to do the same thing the Americans are doing to them. And so it's inevitable that they will actually get good at it. And that's exactly what's happening here. So, you know, the problem was people were very happy to get things cheap. But now what's going to happen is the labor that was once in China that was cheap will now be in other countries as their whole economics and social systems collapse. Because if you bring immigrants over that are used to working for a dollar a day, when they get here, to get $2 a day is pretty good. So it's not going to take long before most industries in Australia collapse simply because they can't pay people that sort of money. They have to pay them the award wage. So what happens is you get a big black market and eventually businesses collapse because they've been regulated so much that they can't bend or twist. So as other countries accept the third world and give them their $2 a day, places like Australia, the West won't do it. And so we're going to become the lackeys in the long run because we're going to lose all the businesses and all the businesses will go to those countries. It's sort of like what happened with China when everyone wanted to boycott China because of Taiwan and because of the Uyghurs. They started using other Asian countries for their manufacturing, like Thailand and Vietnam and countries like that. You'll probably notice that the made in China has become made in Vietnam and made in India because people are trying to wean themselves off the Chinese slaves that they've used for 50 to 60 years. They want to find other countries. But what's going to happen is those other countries are going to want to be paid more as well. But they're never going to get the wages that we get in the West. That's why they're continually trying to get here as illegal immigrants, because they can get more money. It's a simple equation. But the bottom line is, if these countries do get built up away from China, because China's got a middle class that's growing, they want more money too for what they're doing. We're going to get a third world avalanche, and the West and other countries in the middle class will collapse. It's simple, because there are a greater number of people without wealth and without a steady income, and they're going to want to do sophisticated work that we've got for people that have gone to unis for you know, $2 a day. They'll get their fake university degree and they'll wave that in front of someone. Someone will give them the job, and that's how it works, people. It's called cutting corners all the way to the end. And we're on that slippery slide now. It started because a recession is coming and people are not spending. And so businesses are having to cut back, which is laying off staff. That's how they do it, people. They don't fix the problem. They just lay off staff and wait for it to get better. In this case, I don't see it getting better. I'm keeping my eye on the bankruptcies and the gold just to make sure, and it seems to be hovering ready for the skyrocket jump. So we're just going to have to wait and see. I hope I'm wrong, but this globalists are trying to speed this all up, so it looks like it will happen sooner than later because they want this done now. So that's the only indicator I've got that things are going to change more rapidly. Anyway, so getting back to the story, it says, thankfully, national security voices like the Americans aren't the only ones sounding the alarm. It says recently dozens of congressional members in both the Senate and the House wrote a like-minded letter to the EPA Administrator Michael Reagan. It says, expressing concern over this aggressive plan to reduce vehicle emissions and flood the nation with EVs. It says, additionally, the House passed a choice in Automotive Retail Sales Act of 2023, which is called the CARS Act, at the end of last year, which affirms American security and independence and would force leaders to think of solutions that will responsibly and equitably transition people to EVs. It says pushing forward with emission rules and mandates will only serve to undermine America's national security. So they're using the angle that if you get rid of combustion engine cars, which aren't tracked, and you get EV cars, they can be tracked. And also, you're also tied to the lithium battery, which China makes. Even though they don't own the lithium, they do own the way to do it. And if you're going to do a quick transition, you haven't got time to set up your own operation. You have to use the Chinese one. And that's really what's going to happen here. And that's why they're forcing it, because they want China to be the police of the world anyway. So they're not bothered. It's not about security. It's about control. And they want them, because they're the best at the internet, run it, set it all up. They want them doing it. So they're being used as well. They're like minions too, but they've got Chinese overlords that are sitting at the same table as the globalists. So there's no change in what they want. It's the same. It's not a national, it's not a cultural thing. It's not even ideological. It's just blind control, because they want to be the gods of the future and they want to control nature as well, hence the weather weapons. But you know, you and I know that they just can't do it, but they're going to try anyway. So it says, just to finish up, pushing towards emission rules and mandates will only serve to undermine Americans' national security and all around the world as well. President Xi Jinping's recent speech at the G20 made it clear that China wants to maintain its position at the top of this market and its continuing investments to do so. As stated in our letter, this is the retired general, we must strengthen our market share and capabilities before hastening the clean energy transition. In this way, we can stand up for freedom and democracy rather than submit to Chinese domination and secure a prosperous economic future for us all in the 21st century. So, you know, nonsensical. If the New World Order needs the Chinese to run as the police, well, they're going to let them do it. So that's the argument. So if people knew that part of the jigsaw puzzle, they would realize it's not going to happen. They're going to continue doing what they're doing the same way. So now you can see people on a simple level of just electric vehicles and electric bikes, it's a big issue. It's not about what it used to be in the past, where it was a car company like Holden or Ford that dominated. It's nothing to do with that now. All these cars are shells with batteries, and they have an internet connection, and it's a strong one. So it's like driving around in a PC car, if that's sort of one, if you want that analogy, and it can be hacked. Just like cars in the past could, you know, someone could break into the car and steal it and drive it off and they could hotwire it. This is a different thing. This is a car that can be controlled remotely. You don't need to be in the car. You just need it to have a live internet connection and you can remotely control it. That's very, very dangerous, considering that if you look at all the cyber hacking going on with banks and all these sort of institutions around us. Imagine if the whole of Australia had like 10 million electric cars and they all got hacked at the same time, which is improbable. But the possibility of something like that happening is out there. And to have a car hacked, you could be in the car when they take control of the wheel. This is how serious this gets, or whatever. It doesn't matter what the control is. The fact is you've lost control, and that's what's going to happen if these people do implement what they want. They'll control the system, but you won't be able to control your devices anymore. And it's not just about a car or a scooter or a bike. It's all your Internet of Things in the kitchen. It's everything in your house, your air conditioner. I mean, I told you the story recently about the 170,000 air conditioners that were turned down at the height of the heat. And this is it. It's a really scary world controlled by a very minute few. And that's where we're headed if we let them do this. And if we give them the reins and their agenda is depopulation, what do you think's coming? Now, even this story in Australia resonates. This is from the 12th of January, 2024. And I may have already talked about this story, but I wanted to tie it in with what I'm talking about now so you can see that Australia is not left behind. We are part of the New World Order's agenda. We're at the forefront of it as well. It's got to abc.net.au, came out 12th of January 2024. Greens make election promise to fight Brisbane's car dependency with more crossings and cycle lanes. So this is another way of attacking it with the green thing. I mean, where I am on the Northern Beaches, not far from where I'm working, they're starting to plant trees everywhere. And I thought, this is getting, is this some sort of a quota they have to meet? But they are seriously planting trees into the footpath willy-nilly all around the place. Now, the irony about that is where I'm from the Northern Beaches, in the middle of the main road, which there's a road called Pittwater Road that runs, it's a quite a long road, it runs the full length virtually of the Northern Beaches. And in that particular road, in a couple of suburbs around Brookvale and places like that, there used to be trees lining the actual, you know, here you got a median strip, or I think someone corrected me the other day, instead of a medium, it's a median. The median strip in the middle used to be all trees for miles, all through the middle of these two main roads on left and right of Pittwater Road, used to be trees down the centre of it, which was actually awesome. Back in the day, it was normal to do that drive. Now, this is more recently, like decades ago, probably. I couldn't actually work out when they did the changeover. I'm getting someone to look that up for me, because I couldn't find anything online about when they ripped the trees out. And I thought, I'm going to have to go through all my photos that I've got stored to try and find where those trees are. But the bottom line is, it was a long time ago. And they replaced it with concrete barriers and also other sorts of barriers like that, like the gated ones and things like that. And it's very, very ugly and horrible. And you don't have the shade anymore when you used to drive down that road. But that was when they started to de-green everything. Now they're going back to replanting everything. So you can see it's a big political football, the tree. It's got nothing to do with greening anywhere. It's to make sure that there's an illusion that they're doing something for the environment, because that's the big swear word at the moment. Okay, sustainability, environmental ism is the new ism, as opposed to communism or socialism. It's environmental ism. Okay, so this story goes, just so you can get up to date what they're talking about. Brisbane could be harder for drivers, but easier for cyclists and pedestrians under a sweeping proposal by the Greens to deprioritise cars in favour of people. So this is the idea. Get you out of your car so you won't own one anymore. That's the plan, all right? It says, the promise comes ahead of the Brisbane City Council election scheduled for March the 16th. It says the Streets for People plan includes 100 traffic calming projects designed to slow or reduce the number of cars in Brisbane's neighbourhoods. As part of the plan, the party has vowed to spend $500 million over the next 4 years on 200 pedestrian crossings, 35 kilometres of bike lanes, and 200 kilometres of footpaths. So the bike lanes and all this sort of stuff will include e-bikes. You see how they're doing this, people. It will include e-scooters, okay? It won't include cars. So the whole idea is to get you out of that car you won't need anymore. If you want to get your shopping, they'll make sure that you're in your 20-minute zone where you have to get permission to drive out of it, and you can order your food inside that zone from the local shopping supermarket that will be there, because they'll all be the same. Coles and Woolies and all these ones in Australia and Aldi and all them will still, but they'll be in all these different zones. That's what's going to happen. You'll have no choice anymore. There won't be any, look for the corner stores now. Where's all the grocery corner stores? They're all gone, people. Vanished. How'd that happen? Well, that's because it's getting set up for a new world order to control your food supply. Okay, this is where the water supply is next. Once they do the PFAS, they're going to start reducing that too, simply because it's dangerous for you and we haven't got all the operations in place to do it. So we're going to have to close down those water facilities until they've got the new machinery. It's going to get really, I know exactly what they're doing. It's totally and utterly on purpose and planned. Okay. Now, reading back just to finish that Brisbane one off, it says Brisbane LNP Deputy Mayor Krista Adams said Brisbane drivers should be very concerned about the possibility of the Greens getting into power. She said the party's, wait for it, people, radical agenda would mean higher taxes and less funding for road infrastructure, and that's true. The latest attack on motorists by the Greens' self-declared anarchist candidate is further proof that anyone who owns a car in Brisbane should be terrified about a Green-Labor coalition of chaos running City Hall, Councillor Adams said. It says the reckless and costly plan will cause widespread traffic chaos and force Brisbane households to pay higher rates and rent. And there will be a fatality. There will be a car hitting a pedestrian more frequently because of the setup. And that's when they'll demonise cars even more. So it's got plan to end, I love this line, plan to end car centrism. It's another ism. They put an ism on it. Car centrism. Green's mayoral candidate, Jonathan, I've got to get this name right. This is a long name. I think I might have even done this story before, but I'm just going through it because it does time with what I'm saying. So it makes it much clearer. His name is Sivi, it's a long name. It's an Indian name by the look of it. Sivirangan Nathan. Sirangan Nathan. He said his party's plan would put pedestrians first and free families from car dependency. People like driving, mate. He's trying to say that they are dying to get out of the cars that they bought. It says Mr. S, I'm going to call him Mr. Siri, I'll call him because I can't do the long name, a long-standing critic of car centrism, said the major parties had prioritised wider roads and more cars at the expense of everybody else. It says he said Brisbane's walking and cycling network was full of gaps, which meant pedestrians had to live in fear because of the car-centric city planning. If you wouldn't feel safe letting your child walk or ride to school, that shows our active transport infrastructure isn't up to scratch, Mr. Siri said. Now, I have looked this guy up. I did look him up in the past, and he's like a member of some band. It's like a sax player or a trumpet player or something like that. And he's in that real, it's not a hippie movement, but it's definitely this Save the Planet movement. These are the sort of guys that are utterly hijacked. They're minions, perfect for the New World Order because they are blind to it. They don't see past, I was going to say the forest from the trees, but I'll say it anyway. Can't see past the forest from the trees. And it says, wherever you go in the world, the most popular and pleasant neighbourhoods are the ones where cars are deprioritised. We want Brisbane streets to serve as vibrant public spaces where active transport comes first. Now, that's what active transport is. Remember I mentioned the other guy from another article I did, and I think his name was Mr. Bland. Remember that? And he was a university undergraduate or something like that, was studying how to create green bridges between zones. This is the green bridge is just people walking instead of driving. That's what the bridge is. So active transport is, wait for it, people, the two things on the end of your ankles. That's active transport when they quote that. So it says, close calls. Greens Paddington candidate Seal Chong, I'll get the name right, Seal Chong Wah, said her ward was neither safe nor convenient for pedestrians. Mrs. Wah said she'd been told by Paddington locals about close calls with traffic, particularly those with limited mobility. Now, I'm not going to do a racist thing here, but a lot of the Chinese people I know have no common sense. Okay, we're talking about in traffic. We're not talking about cars. We're talking about pedestrians. I have had countless times and heard from countless amount of people where these sort of pedestrians will walk in front of cars and not look where they're going. It's because in their own country, when they move across a road, and you can go to George Street in the city and see this, when they move across the road, they move in like massive hordes. So the cars have to actually stop. They can't actually get through it. But over in Australia, we don't have the massive hordes crossing the roads. I mean, you go to, as I just said, you go to George Street in the CBD in Sydney, and you'll see what I'm talking about when they cross the road. It's like huge herds of people just walking, and they don't care. We're not talking about when the lights change. We're talking walking diagonally across X intersections when they're not supposed to. But they just do it because that's what they're used to doing in their own country. When they come here, they're not supposed to. We are the most regulated traffic-controlled country in the world, virtually. But still, the point I'm making is that's why they're getting hit. Okay. So reading on, it says the Brisbane mum said she witnessed the issue firsthand when two students narrowly avoided being hit by a large four-wheel drive. You see, they like to demonise the big cars because they guzzle and they're big. That's why you see them in the news all the time, running people over constantly. It says one of the very first acts of the new LNP councillor was to cancel a vital pedestrian crossing project at Rosalie Village, Miss Wah said. That's where the person, the two kids nearly got hit. It says, Rosalie Village is a beautiful community hub packed with local businesses, cafes and restaurants, but everyone knows it's not safe for pedestrians. The plan also includes protected bike lanes on 15 high-priority corridors and lower speed limits on certain residential streets. So they're going to lower the, speed limit even more. So you're definitely going to get fined. I mean, it's down to 40 Ks in some places and you're just crawling through the streets at ridiculously slow speed. But that's, they'll lower it even more. They'll put it down to 25. And that's the same, that's like the limit for electric bikes. But that's what will probably happen. It doesn't surprise me. All part of the 20-minute city. You need to look this stuff up, people. It's coming. They're going to zone certain streets off, just like they would if it was a border. And you're not actually physically allowed to drive a car over that. And they'll put bollards up, like they've done in Oxford, in the city in the UK. They put bollards up on the road. These are like the big blockages, so you can't drive through there. And the people in Oxford were so angry about this trial that was done to them, they drove through the bollards and said, no, we're not doing this. It's stupid. But that's what's starting to happen. This will end up being enforced by the police. That's what's going to happen, and you'll be trapped in your 20-minute city or town or zone, and you'll have to buy everything within that or get it shipped in by courier from the outside world, because it'll become like that. You won't be able to go anywhere. You'll have your own school, your own this, your own hospital, your own everything. It's fictitious. It can't work, but they're going to try and do it. That's the funny part. In fact, I'm going to go now and look at the Oxford situation and see what's happened with an update. One sec. Actually, before I go to that, I've got to give you a lowdown on that. The person I was talking about before, the Brisbane mayoral Greens candidate, Jonathan Sirianni, and it's spelled S-R-I-A-N-G-A-N-A-T-H-A-N. It says, this is an article. This is to give you an idea of the sort of crazy stuff that's coming. Real Estate Institute of Queensland criticises Brisbane mayoral candidate's anti-eviction workshop. And this is abc.net.au, came out 7th of September 2023. It says, a man who once shackled himself to a fly screen door with a bike lock is offering lessons on how to resist eviction. Brisbane mayoral Greens candidate Jonathan Seary, I'm going to say that, said he would teach people how to stop evictions, including physically blocking police from entering a house. We don't want to have to organise actions like this. We're forced to do so because the government is not supporting people who are at the risk of homelessness, he said. This is a problem of the government failing to provide enough public housing and failing to introduce sufficient protections against rent gouging and landlords exploiting tenants. Well, stop. Go on and send a letter to Albanese to stop letting 700,000 people come here, because where are we going to put them? He said the Brisbane workshop would also include how to appeal to a landlord's better nature before they evicted a tenant. It's got Real Estate Institute of Queensland Chief Executive Antonio Mercurella said it was alarming that somebody with such a high profile could educate people on potentially committing an illegal act. It concerns us that this is a former Brisbane City Councillor who, it sounds like, intends to give advice on how to break the law, Mrs. Mercurella said. We are sympathetic to tenants who are evicted, but the solution is not to break the law and simply to refuse to leave the property. But Mr. Siri, who has been advertising his October 1st workshop on social media, rejected any suggestion he was training people to break the law. The Real Estate Institute of Queensland is training real estate agents on how to make people homeless, he said. They provide detailed advice and training to real estate agents on how to end leases and evict tenants, even when the tenants haven't done anything wrong. University of Queensland Law School Dr. David Morrison said it was in his view that Mr. Siri's workshop itself was not illegal because it is unknown precisely what is being offered in terms of advice. So in other words, and this is the part I wanted to get to, they've got pictures of the guy. It says, in June last year, he chained himself to a fly screen door to protest against a public housing eviction. And it says, In September last year, the then council said it was 100% ethically justifiable for low-income earners to steal from Coles and Woolworths. So there you go. Crazy's out of the bag. He's waving the big white flag. You know, I'm the guy. Follow me. Gandhi. I don't know who he thinks he is, but there you go. They come here and they just change everything. They change the rules. So this is the problem. We're dealing with too many people, and this is not about depopulation. Now, this is overpopulation on purpose. It's called watering down the middle class, people. This is the whole point of it, is to make sure they get you out of your car. That's your first thing. Get you out of your car so you don't have a car. Then they're going to get you out of your house, and they're going to give it up for all the people that need to rent. That's where it's heading. So no one will own their house, and apparently they'll be happy. That's what Klaus Schwab from the WEF has said so many times. Why aren't we listening? Okay, there's not a great deal about the what they call the 15-minute city. I was calling it the 20-minute. But they've got an article here at the beginning of it, and it's dated January the 18th, 2024. It's from Alex, I'm trying to get the name here, alexklaushoffer.medium.com. I haven't verified the journalist or the story, but I'm just going to read it to see, because there's actually nothing online. Just did a search for 2024, which I find really odd. But I've got a PDF I've got to go through too, which looks like a government document. So maybe there might be some here. But I'll just read this and see if it's got any truth in it. And we'll see if there's anything in it. So it's got next month on February the 29th. So this is obviously January 2024. The father of the 15-minute city is going to give a talk at Oxford University. Carlos Moreno is an urban planner and the professor of the Sorbonne who coined the term 15-minute city at COP21, a model for future cities which has since been enthusiastically embraced by bodies such as the United Nations and has become the focus of numerous websites. It says the idea behind the event is clearly to gain support for an experimental scheme that was approved by Oxford County Council in November 2022, with Cabinet Member Duncan Enright explaining in the Sunday Times that the idea was to turn Oxford into a 15-minute city. In autumn 2024, six traffic filters will effectively divide the centre of Oxford into 15-minute zones, with the owners of private cars allocated 100 permits a year to drive into them. The city will be monitored by an AMPR camera, and any journeys taken without permits will result in fines. Unsurprisingly, the scheme, along with Oxford's low traffic neighbourhoods, has generated a lot of controversy. Can you imagine that? This is what I was saying before. Almost a year to the day from Marino's talk, the author published a piece on the Australia-based website Mercantornet, Mercantornet, which sought to examine the conflation of the 15-minute city concept with driving restrictions and why rational discussion on the subject has become so difficult. The site has since become Mercator and the piece is no longer available. That's what it should say. It says pieces longer available. They mean no longer available. So as it contains some useful context, I am republishing why have 15-minute cities become the hottest conspiracy theory of 2023. And so he's actually grabbed that article. So there was a link to it, but I'm just going to go to that link and see if it's still operable and see where it goes to. So it's become mercatornet.com and it's changed to Mercator. And it's got a picture of Albanese. I will go into this. This looks very, very interesting because it's an Australian perspective and we need to know about that, don't we, people? So I'm just going to save that and I'll go back to the other article and we'll see if we can make head or tail of what is coming. Now it says, as my university city, this is the author, Oxford has a special place in my heart. It's where, as my mother observed when I came home after my first term, I got my bicycle calves. So in other words, you would ride your bike through there. It says something strange is happening in the United Kingdom. An innocuous idea, not particularly original and not in itself controversial, has become the focus of a kind of war. It's a war between people and authority and an ideological war between different sections of the population. At the heart of all this strife is the 15-minute city, an urban planning concept developed by academic Carlos Moreno to address the ills of modern city living and embraced by Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo as part of her 2020 election campaign. The idea is that everything you need for day-to-day living, such as shops, employment, education, and health services, should be found within 15-minute walk or cycle from your home. It's just a theory. This is what they're going to do, people. And I'll read on. Now, I've just gone to Wikipedia to look up this Carlos Moreno. He's called an urbanist. He's a Franco-Colombian researcher scientist. So I just want to see if there's any connection. It says he is mainly known for his contribution to the 15-minute city. And so there you go. So I'm just going to see if he's got any connection to any of the globalists, because that would make perfect sense. Perfect sense, people. And how's this for irony, people? In his career, he worked as his specialization was in robotics. And you go, oh, okay, so that's why he wants to get rid of cars and bring back people and robots. No, it gets worse. It says in the 1990s, Moreno worked on adaptive robotization of multi-competent production systems, wait for it, people, of the automobile assembly industry. So he was actually making cars faster. It says in 1998, Moreno established Synovia at the laboratories, Des Methodes Informacues, some sort of French, I don't know French, but it looks like methods of information. The company received initial funding from the French government fund and subsequent investments from business angels and investment funds. So they were onto this guy. By 2000, Moreno had designed a self-adaptive furnace control suitable for firing aircraft parts, specifically wings made of composite materials in 2001. It says, Moreno developed multi-technical and multi-service urban resource sharing platforms leading to the creation of open components, whatever that is. That year, he also designed control systems for nuclear reactors. Oh, he's not a silly person, people. With a focus on steam-generating monitoring. These systems were later implemented in all French nuclear plants and were integrated internationally using his plug-and-net open components methodology. A year later, Moreno had introduced an intelligent street lighting system that was based on the plug and net design. So here you go. This guy's moving slowly away from what he's doing here into surveillance. Even though he wants a greener urbanized zone, you can bet your bottom dollar that it's tied in with the fining and the cameras. Plug and net. So it says in 2003, a collaboration with the bioinformatics laboratory of Evry and Genopol, Moreno was involved in creating robotics for genetic analysis. This guy's right amongst the people. Oh, definitely a best friend of the globalists. A year later, under the Seveso directive, Moreno introduced the plug and view system. Later, he also developed Alert Box, a device designed for residential installation to provide crisis alerts to the public. So we can do that with a siren, can't you, people? Between 2010 and 2015, Moreno advised the Vice President Guy Lacroix at the City of Future Program. City of Future Program, people. He was involved in the establishment of the Carnot Institutes in 2006 and collaborated with the National Research Agency, the creation and monitoring of the Technological Research Institutes and the Institutes for Dear Excellence of Energies Decarbon, which later became Institute of Transition Energies. So this guy was moving away from what was smaller projects into these huge projects, controlled vast amounts of people. In 2010, Moreno joined the Strategic Orientation Advisory Committee of the French government program. So he's in the government now. He also researched cities as complex systems. So there you go. And worked on digital platform related to city infrastructure. So here he was looking at how to, and the next sentence says it all, people. In 2015, Moreno coined the term 15-minute city at the Paris of the United Nations Climate Change COP21 conference. Moreno became a specific advisor to the Paris's mayor, Anne Hidalgo, who embraced the concept and made it a key part of her election campaign and mayoral policy. In 2017, Marino joined the Paris Business School of Management, and he is co-founder of the and chair of Entrepreneurship Territory Innovation, which focuses its research on urban and territorial mutations. Don't you love that word, territorial mutations? In 2022, Marino launched the Global Observatory of Sustainable Proximities, the 15-minute city. It was a notable recommendation in the United Nations Habitat World Cities report that year. So he's in with the globalists. They've already signed him up. Throughout his career, Marino has been involved in numerous governmental committees and public service activities. His TEDx presentation on the 15-minute city has reached 1.5 million views and is available in 18 languages. Okay, so now you know. This guy is now being pushed from the very people that need this to happen. In other words, get you out of your car. And this guy's the one that's going to do it, because if he gets away with these 15-minute cities, why do you need a car? You won't. The problem is, none of this stuff's going to work globally. It's only going to work in certain areas. And then people will be forced as a blueprint to do it everywhere. And it's going to be the majority that won't be happy anymore. But that's the way it is, people. It's called the future. Okay, so going back to what I was reading, it says, at the heart of all this strife, this is back to the original article, is the 15-minute city, an urban planning concept developed by academic Carlos Marino to address the ills of modern city living and embraced by Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo as part of her 2020 election campaign. The idea that everything you need for day-to-day living, such as shops, employment, education, health services, should be found within a 15-minute walk. So I've already read that. So far, so ideal. As a born Londoner, this is the author, who spent most of her life living in the British capital, she understands all too well how the city that grew from a series of villages has the potential for the kind of self-sufficiency. Reporting on public service in the early 2000s, she also familiarised with the way councils used their limited funds and influence to promote local living. Back then, the trend, expressed in faddish terms such as regeneration and localism, was benevolent and enabling. But the 15-minute city has turned coercive. Oxford County Council is currently implementing a scheme to divide the city into six zones and limit the movement of cars between them. Drivers will have to apply to the council for a permit, allowing them to make 100 journeys a year, about two trips a week. That's it, people. Between the newly created districts, while those from the surrounding areas will be allowed 25 trips. There's people already being fined. These are women with their children driving to work. They're getting fined driving out of their driveway. They're already getting hit by fines just to take their kids to school. Anyway, let me read on. The restrictions will be enforced with number plate recognition cameras, and drivers of unauthorized journeys will be fined. Now, remember I told you, if you look at all the street lights and traffic lights, usually on top of traffic lights at major intersections, you will see the license plate readers. They're little in Australia, in Sydney in particular. They're on about a foot high white pole, and at the top is like a round eye. It's like a white eye on the top, and that films rain, hail, or shine, and it's infrared, the number plate on your car. And that's the sort of technology they'd be using in Oxford right now. It says, unsurprisingly, the scheme has provoked widespread protests, both among residents wondering how they're going to live under such conditions and people concerned that the 15-minute city will come to their patch too. Their concern is well-founded. A number of other councils have professed interest in following suit, because it's a new world order thing, people. They're all told to do it. Bags of gold, on you go. While Canterbury is considered banning driving between neighbourhoods altogether. Meanwhile, more and more low-traffic neighbourhoods are being introduced using the planters used to close roads because of COVID. So remember when they had COVID, they put these planters out, these boxes, to close roads because people would be contaminated and they didn't want people moving about. That was in Australia we called it local government areas, LGAs. This is where you, if you were locked down in that zone, you couldn't leave it because of COVID. This is why COVID is part of this. This is what sped up the idea of QR coding and now this rezoning. So it says, in London, the mayor's proposed expansion of the ultra-low emission zone, I've already talked about this before, is causing a rebellion by councils who fear the daily charge to drive a non-compliant vehicle will close businesses and cripple poorer residents. It's meant to. It's meant to do that. Exactly what it's meant to do. It says the bizarre intertwining of social engineering with traffic management thinly veils the blatant problem at the heart of the 15-minute city. The fact that there are no plans to support the creation of facility in the new zones. Now, that's another big thing, people. Where are the schools? Where are the hospitals? Where are the new roads? Where is this stuff they promised? Where are the shops? They promised to keep you in your zone. No, they're creating the zones now without the facilities. So it says the assumption seems to be that limiting driving will cause the necessary services to appear. Either, this is all the franchises they will come to, people. Either because they are already there but ignored by joyriding residents, or terrible residents, or because restrictions on movement will somehow force new amenities into existence. But jobs, schools, health facilities and businesses don't manifest at will, especially coming into a recession, people. Nor do the people we want to see or events we want to attend conform to municipal boundaries. So how are you going to go to a concert if you're not out of that zone or if you've run out of the tickets? This is the next part. This is the part of why I talked about the bikes at the beginning. It's called On Your Bike. It's the next part of the same story. The response to objections by supporters of the scheme is simple. Those who want to leave their zone more than permitted can walk, bicycle, or get the bus. And here comes another bizarre feature of the anti-driving movement: the lack of willingness to consider the human costs and practicalities. The fact that public transport is limited and some people are not able to cycle or walk any distance goes unacknowledged. What if you're 70 years old and you can't walk? As does the fact that others can't get to their job or juggle work with family responsibilities without a car. Tradesfolk can't transport tools and materials without a vehicle, and householders sometimes need to pick up heavy items from the shop or take waste to the tip. Community events tend to depend on one or two good folk driving crockery, costumes or equipment to a nearby park or hall. Now, I'll give you first-hand information. We did the shopping today, just the grocery shopping. Now, it's not that far from where we are. We're almost a mini 15-minute city ourselves, but we don't want to do that. We did it because every time we order from Coles New World Order, every time we get an order, it's usually wrong. I've had people leave the items outside the door. This is not, see, we're in a unit block. We're not in a house. And they leave it, we're like flights of stairs down from where the main road is, and they leave it on the road. This is your entire 8 bags of groceries with milk and all the sort of things that you would buy. They just left it there and went. And then we got a call. We had no idea how long that stuff had been sitting there. We were actually gracious that no one had stolen it, because that's the next thing coming. As people lose their jobs, a recession comes, you're going to get knocks on the door and you're going to get things stolen. There won't be stuff on the balcony or the front porch anymore because it'll be gone, just like what's happening in the US. It's a big problem for Amazon at the moment. But anyway, so that's a first-hand problem that we tried to rectify by saying we'll get someone to deliver it and I won't have to carry the heavy bags anymore. It doesn't work, people. So we had to go and do the shopping ourselves. Okay? Now, we're quite capable and it isn't that far away. So this is the concept they want to use. They want to make sure that you don't have any other way of doing it. You see, so without a car, we would be forced to have it delivered. That's the end result. But anyway, let me read on. It says, yet there's more strangeness. None of this seems to matter to the supporters of such schemes. Instead of discussing the implications of the policy in a reasoned way, and she says she's old enough to remember when we did do this, more or less in Britain, objections are dismissed with suggestions that they are patently absurd. Plumbers can use tricycles, the underground or river boats, to transport their equipment between jobs. This is in London. Far worse is the painting of anyone who objects to a conspiracy theorist or a member of the far right, and those crude ad hominem tactics come not from angry keyboard warriors, but the mainstream media, the prostitutes, well-sourced publications with editorial standards staffed by people trained in critical thinking, really. I call them the prostitute, meaning trained in doing the globalist ideology. That's it, the agenda. So it's got here the next section. Now, it looks like this is going on longer than I thought, people, so I'm going to try and get the Israeli thing in because I do want to talk about that, but it might be right at the end of the podcast, all right? Because I do want to read this because this is actually really, really important. We're seeing changes where we are, where they're planting trees and rezoning, and we're seeing changes. I don't know about where you are, but that's what we're seeing. So it says conspiracy labeling. Hard then to make sense of this in the Times. This is the publication. What are 15-minute cities and why are anti-vaxxers so angry about them? Hang on, I'm going to read that again. Hard to make sense of this non-event in the Times. What are 15-minute cities and why are anti-vaxxers so angry about them? So let me just read on. Or this strapline from Wired UK. A movement to promote neighbourhood with amenities within walking distance has enraged far-right activists, climate deniers and extremists. All put together, comments from the father of 15-minute city in this Forbes article, and there's a link, shed light on the thinking. Any criticism must necessarily come from a demographic that is recognisably mad and bad. In an all-too-typical Venn diagram of tinfoil hatness, I'm going to say that again, tinfoil hattedness, that's it, they share climate denial, downplay of COVID harms, and anti-vaxxer beliefs. So they're trying to do this. Like when I talked about the guy last week that was pushing climate change and had the hockey stick graph, he's now teaming up in a book that's promoting vaccines because of anti-vaxxers. So you can see that we're now all taking sides. It's starting to happen, people. It says, as protests have mounted, the pattern of the repeating simple ideas, tainting by unwarranted associations, has replicated across the media. The Guardian, that's another publication, bemoans the fact that MPs have now joined the online conspiracy theory in expressing objections. A view echoed in the new statements. Statesman, that's it, as a link. While The Conversation, another link, dubs them the hottest conspiracy theory of 2023. It looks increasingly as if the mainstream media, press tube media in brackets I've put, is engaging in willful misunderstanding, distracting from the right under your nose point that makes proposed restrictions do little or nothing to alleviate traffic problems. No, the goal is to get you out of your car so you don't own one. Why? Because then you can't go anywhere without permission. Why? You can be tracked easier. You're on foot. And if you get an electrified bus or an electrified taxi, you can be tracked. This is what they want. They need a grid, a digital grid, and they need you to be seen in it because that's the whole point. Okay, and then they come for you. Once they know who everyone is and who the detractors are, they will come for you. That is 100%. Okay, that's why you need to stop this system in its tracks before it gets to that. Okay, and they're using the green machine to push it. It says the reason given for this regressive discourse is that objectors are exaggerating, categorizing the measures as climate lockdowns, which will happen, which will confine residents to their zones. That's what's going to happen. Every time there's another pandemic or anything, they'll lock the zones down. And you won't be able to physically move between them. You'll be fined by the cameras. Do you understand what is coming, people? This is so, so serious. That's why people are starting to freak out that aren't conspiracy theorists or people that are like myself that are dealing conspiracy facts. Okay, they just want to paint everyone the same as not conforming to the agenda. We do, we die. Very simple. So it says, and it is true that such language is inaccurate. Beyond their permitted drives, Oxford residents will still be able to leave their area via the Ring Road. That's the big, like a giant roundabout, provided they have the time and money for the longer trip. This is also what's happened to people in Oxford. Instead of getting to that business they can see across the road, they have to drive in a full giant circle just to go across the road. That's what they're talking about. So it says, but requiring residents to have a permit to drive grants local authorities unprecedented new powers. And the fines look very much like a tax on movement. And it is. It's a tax on movement. The feeling that a diminished way of life is being imposed from the top is heightened by evidence that authorities are blatantly disregarding public opinion. Oh, absolutely. Oxford County Council's Duncan Enright told the press that the scheme was definitely going ahead before it was officially approved. In Bath, meanwhile, a councillor responded to an objection with the statement that an LTN can go ahead in the face of clear public opposition because the proposal will help to achieve wider council objectives, more like wider agenda objectives. And in London, it seems that the results of the constitution about the expansion of the ultra-low emission zone were skewered. The mayor's office excluded 5,270 responses opposing the ULEZ expansion as copy and paste jobs, but just three in favour of similar grounds. I will read this whole article. It's definitely worth it. It says, making sense of the nonsense. The tendency to take control and impose your own version of the world, psychologists and political theorists remind us, is a perennial temptation for humans. The authoritarian regimes of the 20th century, from Stalinism to Albania under Hoxha, where private cars were banned, are testimony to the evils of political perfectionism, how the intention to create a good society when imposed by force and without regard for the diversity and messiness of human life inevitably leads to dystopia. Perhaps there's something in the urban planning mindset, which its aspiration to create ideal spaces that can tip into ideological thinking and make its proponents feel entitled to override the wishes of ordinary people. You can hear it in the words of Jose Maria, looks like Esquigar, who in June 2020 led an attempt to divide a Madrid neighbourhood into superblocks, measuring 500 by 500, with little more than a few cones and signage. Vehicles that are not residents or merchants can be prevented from passing. He remarked with satisfaction, the plan failed. Let's drive over them. They don't care. The bureaucratic mindset that prevails in the town hall undoubtedly shares this tendency, but money comes into it too. Of course, bags of gold, people. A recent investigation by Bloomberg showed how London councils are making millions in annual revenue from cameras at specific junctions. A revealing conversation between councillors suggests that local authorities are counting on fines from drivers to fill their coffers. Is there a risk that the revenue we are predicting won't be obtained because motorists wise up to the restriction and start complying? Asked Robert Canning in Croydon. From civil strife to civil discourse. So how are we going to get out of this civil strife which risks dividing citizens physically as well as ideologically? Here's a thought. In fact, three. Firstly, if we have the slightest desire to have a peaceful society with any level of maturity, we need to stop engaging in childish public arguments consisting of name-calling and willful misunderstanding. Secondly, we need to separate the issue of traffic restrictions from the complex question of how to create flourishing neighbourhoods and live in greater harmony with the earth. The third thought, while somewhat old-fashioned, sounds radical in these coercive times, but how about shifting the attitudes and emotions underlining the control and punish approach and replacing them with respect and trust for our fellow humans? What if, instead of spending millions on cameras and administrative systems to issue permits and fines, council used that money to seed local community projects? Just imagine, instead of corralling, prohibiting and infantilizing, the good that could come from citizens giving free expression to their own inner city authority and creativity. It's not going to happen, people. They are implementing this. So let's see if we can get an update, because that was more on explaining what is happening. okay, from the 15-minute city. So now you've got an idea of how bad this is going to get if it comes. And I have got a PDF from Oxfordshire, the council. It's called Central Oxfordshire Travel Plan, August 2022. And it's in there. Everything's in there. It's got how much, you know, the fining, how quick they want to reduce cars by till there's none. It's all there, people. The bus systems, everything. So this is the blueprint for every zone in the world once they implement them. Once all the councils around the world decide, oh, we're all going to die unless we get the emissions down, they will implement this. This is how they're going to cancel the car. Private ownership, that is. You'll be taxed out of it anyway. They'll fine and tax you out of your car anyway. So this is definitely going. This is definitely coming. Definitely in the West. This is what I always say to people too. Oh, but this could happen in China and India. No, no. Or Russia. No, it's not going to happen in those countries. They're not bothered. No, none of these places care. They will just go on as they always have, building more coal-fired power stations, 2/3 of the population on the planet, not listening to us at all. So in this proposal, it's got local transport and connectivity plan. This is the headline target. So this is more or less, it's not really an update of 2024, what's happening now, but it's going to give you an update for 2030, 2040, and 2050. It says by 2030, our target is to replace or remove one out of every four current car trips in Oxfordshire. So they want to reduce not just cars, but the trips. It says increase the number of cycle trips in Oxfordshire from 600,000 to 1 million cycle trips per week. So cycle. Reduce road fatalities or life-changing injuries by 50%. Well, that's because there's less cars. But the fact is you'll have other sorts of accidents. It says by 2040, our targets are to deliver a net zero transport network, replace or remove an additional one out of three car trips in Oxfordshire. So by 2050, and this is their golden target, they always say, our targets are to deliver a transport network that contributes to a climate positive future, have zero or as close as possible road fatalities or life-changing injuries. Well, they won't, by 2050, there won't be people. So they're not going to have any fatalities. Fatalities will already have occurred without car accidents before that. It's just insane. People are really, really silly. They are falling for this green machine. Incredible. Now here's another one about the buses. I mean, this is classic and just other things. It says outcomes and actions. This strategy is shaped by a number of defined outcomes. These outcomes represent a set of guiding transport and movement principles, which inform and run throughout the strategy. The outcomes are, one, a flagship comprehensive zero emission bus network, which is obviously electric buses, able to travel at the speed limit 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because they'll be remotely monitored. It says, two, a comprehensive, safe, inclusive cycle network to rival the best in Europe. So on your bike. Number three, beautifully designed streets and public spaces with clean air. Okay. Number four, a reduced impact of private vehicles, only the very rich with their electric vehicles, where roads are congestion-free for the very rich to drive straight down that road with no one in the way, for residents, visitors, and businesses to make essential journeys in zero-emission vehicles. Only the very rich will do that, people. The rest of us will be on your bike. Number five, carbon neutral transport for a carbon neutral city. Prioritising measures and approaches that utilise minimal resources, except for lithium batteries lying all over the road. Number six, a travel hierarchy prioritising sustainable travel and promoting 20-minute neighbourhoods. So it's moved from 15-minute to 20, where everything people need for their daily lives can be found within a 20-minute walk. So if you're elderly, get ready for a 20-minute walk. You should be fine, as long as you've got two legs. Improved, so, this is the next one, this is number seven. Improved safety realised through a Vision Zero approach to transport safety across the area. And finally, number eight, an inclusive transport network that improves accessibility for all our residents, which is pretty much resonating the whole thing they said before, but there's the electrified bus network. Okay, that's what they want. If you haven't got the bus, you got the bike. That's it. So the e-bike is actually front and center of what they're trying to promote for you to get you out of your car. That's it. And you'll have limits on that. Every time you drive down the street, you'll be photographed. The whole thing. This is what is coming, people. And with 5G, the actual 5G network, you are in the Matrix digital prison grid. And you will not be allowed out of it unless you get permission. Or you'll be fined. And then you'll be sent off to the re-education camp. It all sounds funny. It's not really funny, people. This is actually quite possible. You're a repeat offender. No one's going to stand up for you. They're going to go, well, you're not standing up for the climate. Who's going to stand up for you? Simple. So I found another publication from oxfordmail.co.uk. Okay, so this is the publication that's about what's happening directly in Oxfordshire, but it's 27th of October 2022. So not quite recent, but the headline says it all. It says, anger after travel chief announces traffic filters are going to happen definitely ahead of decision. In other words, they just put in these fines, these cameras. They didn't ask anyone. They just said, we're going to do it and there's nothing to do about it. It says traffic filters will definitely be introduced in Oxford, said a travel chief, implying the controversial plan would go ahead whether people liked it or not. A cabinet decision on the traffic restrictions will be made on November the 29th, following a consultation which closed early this month. But Duncan Enright, cabinet member for Travel and Development Strategy, has already told the Sunday Times it's going to happen definitely. The filters stopping most motorists from driving through Oxford City Centre will divide the city into six 15-minute neighbourhoods. He said, with the aim of reducing congestion and making city life more pleasant. That's the carrot they dangle. It says, but his premature announcement hardened residents' suspicions that the county council does not listen to them. Hotelier Jeremy Mogford, who owns the Old Bank Hotel in High Street and the Old Parsonage Hotel and Geese in Banbury Road, said, it's outrageous. We are all hoping that, as we live in a democracy, that a consultation means what it says. It says we should all be concerned about the fact that it's not a democratic decision, because what he is saying is, irrespective of what we say, they will go ahead anyway. He's saying he could not give a monkey's, for God's sake. He added, I'm told Enright lives in Whitney. He's making decisions that are going to be life-changing for us in the city. I bet he rarely comes here except for council meetings. If it wasn't so serious, it would be funny. We're being dictated to by councillors who don't even live here. The county council has faced accusations that its public consultations are a token gesture. LTNs in Cowrie were made permanent despite a consultation showing that 63% of residents objected. The permanent closure of a section of Whitney High Street and the introduction of paid parking in Woodstock Town Centre also went ahead despite public consultations showing most residents objected. It says, despite this, councillors are repeatedly urging the public to take part in the consultation on East Oxford low-travel neighbourhoods, which are the LTNs, which is running until November the 30th. Mr. Enright explained in the Sunday Times that the heart of the traffic filters policy was to turn Oxford into a 15-minute city with local services within a small walking radius. The new traffic filters are at St. Cross Road, Thames Street, Hythebridge and St. Clements would operate 7 days a week from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Two more filters on Marston Ferry Road and Hollow Way would operate from Monday to Saturday. So you can see there, people can drive freely around their own neighbourhood and can apply for a permit to drive through the filters and into other neighbourhoods for up to 100 days per year. This equates to an average of 2 days per week. So you can see I've already mentioned that before, but I just did a search then just on like an update from around the world for a 20-minute city to see where else in the world this is this is starting up. And surprise, but no surprise, I found this. And it's from propertyupdate.com.au. It says, how living locally, this is in Australia, and the rise of the 20-minute neighbourhood will ensure some suburbs outperform in 2023. So this is April the 11th, 2023, propertyupdate.com.au. Key takeaways. 2023 is turning out to be the year that our real estate markets reset and a new property cycle begins. It says, but we're not in it for the property boom anytime soon, and moving toward forward, affordability will remain a big issue remaining. Our capital growth will be very fragmented depending upon local factors. Here we go. The ability to work and live and play all within 20 minutes reach is a new gold standard desirable lifestyle. And it says in this article, they will list seven key criteria for a great neighborhood. So it's already being coaxed here, and that was last year. It says, I'm just seeing if I can read it. 2023 is turning out to be the year of our real estate markets resetting. And it says, now that our lives are getting back to what it was like to call COVID normal, people are likely to continue working flexible rosters, which they have, and hybrid situations where we work at least part-time from home and from here to stay, and are here to stay. And that's true. This means gone are the days where our home was simply the place we rest our heads and enjoy some downtime between work and our social lives. Oh, the lessons we learned from coronavirus social distancing have put an end to life as we once knew it. So true. In my mind, the ability to work, live and play all within 20 minutes reach is the new gold standard desirable lifestyle. Does sound like a bit of a prison sentence, doesn't it, people? One thing I know, many of those living in Melbourne learned during our 260 days of lockdown was the importance of their third place. If our first place is home and our second place is work or in the office, there's the ability to go to a third place that was taken away from many of us during the lockdowns. It may have been a favourite cafe, a gym, a place of worship, or even local shops and pubs. They miss that feeling and connection to others, having an outlet to take a break from family or colleagues for a short period to reset. A gym or exercise centre has been substituted for a favourite walking or cycling path with green space and fresh air. So all these features combined will be a major requirement, will create high demand moving forward. So this is coming, people. This is seriously, seriously coming. And straight away, the picture they put in here is a kid riding up a footpath on a scooter. Not an e-scooter, but that's coming. It says, imagine being able to carry out your daily activities within a 20-minute walk from home. What if you can't walk? All the things you need in a day would be just a short walk away. In urban planning circles, it's a concept known as the 20-minute neighborhood, and it could be on the cards for your area sooner than you think. It seems that people love the thought that most of their things needed for a good life are within 20-minute public transport trip, bike ride, or walk from home. Things such as shopping, business services, education, community facilities, recreational and sporting resources, and some jobs. But this is nothing new. The rise of the 20-minute neighbourhood started long before COVID-19. It says the concept arose from people's desire to return to living locally and urban planning's recognition that these neighbourhoods offer high levels of livability, says the UNSW's built environment professor, Linda Corkery. I'll just look up Linda Corkery and we'll see if she's got any ties to the WEF or any of those sort of organizations, because this is how this is implemented. This is where this stuff comes from, people. So I'm just going to Linda Corkery, and it's got, it's LinkedIn. It won't let me look at it. Okay, so we'll just go to see if there's a wiki. Probably not. She doesn't seem that known, but they've got interviews with her. So I'll just see if there's something in here where I can get an idea of why this real estate has decided to go with a 20-minute neighborhood. Well, when I looked her up, she's more or less just a professor that designs landscapes and greenery. And so she doesn't have any link to anyone because she's not as well known, but they're referencing her on this real estate site. And I'll let her speak and then maybe it'll all be in what she says. She says, the goal of the 20-minute neighborhood is to make available the essentials of day-to-day life within a convenient walk from home, she says. This means having shops, services, schools, public transport, and employment within a 20-minute walk. A Coles every 20 minutes, people, can you believe it? So considering a typical day, I might need to get my kids to school. You've got to pay that fine going through the, what was it called? What they call it in Oxford? It was like a... I can't remember what they called it, not like a ticketing system, but I forget what they called it. So she's saying, considering a typical day I might need to get my kids to school, you'll have to go outside of that zone, around the other zones, because you've used up all your tickets, to get the kids to school, which is across the road. She says, collect a script at the chemist, meet a friend for coffee, pick up groceries, and ideally that could all be done on foot. So here she is carrying 6 bags of groceries. She's just been to the coffee shop. She's got a script from the dent, and she wants to do that all the time. And then it says, get my kids to school. So no, that doesn't mean the car. That means you've got to get out of your car and walk. So 20 minutes each way. This is what is ridiculous about this, people. There's no way, but people are too lazy. That's why we point and click everything. And we want everything delivered on the internet because we're lazy now. We're not, no one wants to get out and exercise. That's the problem with the world. They don't want to do this, okay? What this is coaxing people to do, in my opinion, is to say, well, if you do this, it's all fresh air and you're going to get healthier. What's really going to happen is they're just going to have no car. They're still going to point and click and try and figure out how to do it without having to do anything too hardcore. They're not going to do it, people, because they've been trained to be like they are now. They've been trained to go online and not go to the shop. And here they are telling you to go to the shop cold turkey. It's not going to happen. See, the globalists just want you out of your car. They want to be able to track you, and they want to link all these cities together all around the world so they can put it on a central database and start finding you out of existence. Because people are still going to do what they do. The problem is they're not going to be able to do it the way they did before. In other words, private car ownership will go. It will seriously go. And the next thing will be private home ownership. And then, as the World Economic Forum has stated, you will own nothing and you'll be apparently very happy. So they are pushing this. This was in, it says, creating a city of 20-minute neighbourhoods is a key policy direction of Plan Melbourne 2017 to 2050. So there's already a plan for that. And they've got a big nice graph up here they've stuck up, which I've seen before, benefits of living local. And this is only if your local area does have the supermarkets and does have a hospital and does have schools, okay? And it is all within 20 minutes. This is if you can do that. How many suburbs can say they can do that? Exactly. So that's why it can't work. It's not meant to work. It's meant to just get you out of your car and not provide the amenities and find you out of existence. People are going to realize what a con this really is. In fact, they reckon that if, because people have argued, there's no infrastructure. Where are the schools? How are you going to do this? And it's, oh, they'll come. If they see that you're locked down, excuse the pun, they'll build these facilities. This is in the middle of recession. It's not going to happen. This is what's called being locked down without choice, with no pandemic. That's what it really means. Okay, I'm not going to talk about any COVID rats this week. I will probably do it next week. I'm just going to try and wrap all that up and get it collated and stick it up on the widget on conspiracyoz.com so anyone can click on it and see who the COVID rats of Oz are. Of course, when the next pandemic comes, that'll be wiped clean. There'll be a whole bunch of new ones, the same as the World Health Organization Executive Board, whose hands will flash into the air and say, yes, it's another pandemic of global proportions. The difference is that all the countries are signed up now to let the World Health Organization become the actual purveyors of pushing the narrative. That's what's going to be so dangerous about the next pandemic. The QR codings are obviously already in, and they'll speed up the 20-minute cities. It's very much inevitable, people. Now, I'm just going to use the last 10 minutes or so just to explain my take on this Gaza Marine. This is where the gas is in Gaza and why they're killing all the Palestinians and getting them out of that whole Gaza Strip. This is why this war has escalated, because it is about gas, but they're not going to tell you that. Now, there was an argument that came out. I saw this and I thought, I've got to mention it. Okay, this is from, see if I get the name of the publication, today.lorientlejeune.com. So it's obviously a French publication. The Lorient Today, that's what it's called in English. It's got it. So it's got gas at stake in Gaza, ? Why this theory doesn't hold true. So I thought, oh, I've got to read this. Now, it's dated the 16th of November 2023, and it says on social media, and this is true, Israel has been accused of bombing the enclave to seize an offshore gas field. This geostrategic interpretation is far from reality. And I went, what? So I decided to read it. And this is, I mean, you've got to read the opposing, I'm not even going to look up who the person is, but you've got to realize that there are opposing people to what we think is the truth. They will just oppose it and tell you a pack of lies to talk you out of it. I mean, I've read so many of them, and I don't even bother to mention them, but I thought I'd mention this one simply because it's putting forward something that is a blatant lie, and that's why I thought I'd read it. Because a lot of people reading this would think, oh, okay, so it shouldn't matter. But let me just read it and I'll tell you what I'm talking about. This is to discredit the fact that they want the gas. It says, according to Hassan Soli, sounds like it might be a publication, the war in Gaza was never about Hamas. Israel is destroying the enclave's infrastructure so they can benefit from the natural gas reserves, said the Egyptian dentist in a video that got 500,000 views on TikTok. So this guy's trying to downplay the idea that Israel wants the gas by saying some dentist said, oh no, that's not the reason, this is the reason. He says, using the same argument, CJ Wellman, an Australian commentator with 170,000 followers on YouTube, described the war as genocide motivated purely by greed and profit. Then it's got Richard Medhurst, who presents himself as a Syrian-British journalist, sees the war as part of a broader Western plan to promote Israeli gas exports through the new India-Middle East-Europe economic corridor, which runs from India through the Gulf and Israel to Europe, all the while cutting off Russian, Iranian and Arab gas from the international market. He added in a video that got 125,000 likes on Instagram, and that's exactly why they're in Gaza slaughtering Palestinians. But these theories, in addition to being full of dubious interpretations, pose a serious problem. They explain a complex and multifaceted war solely through a geostrategic prism. Yet, even this geopolitical argument doesn't hold. Wait for it, people. Here's why. What is Gaza Marine? Discovered by the British Gas, tongue-tied. In 2000, the Gaza Marine Natural Gas Field, located offshore in the Gaza Strip, is estimated to hold, wait for it people, 32 billion cubic metres of natural gas. It is complemented by a smaller field of 3 billion cubic metres near Palestinian and Israeli territorial waters. These estimates far exceed the needs of a Palestinian territories in energy. They represent a bonanza of to $800 million a year, according to calculations of Palestinian economist Samir Halali. It says, but Gaza Marine was never developed because of Israel's objections. Israel feared that the Palestinian territories would gain energy independence and that the revenues would end up in Hamas pockets. Faced with successive deadlocks, Royal Dutch Shell, which is globalist, acquired Gaza Marine in 2016 through its acquisition of the BG Group, which have up its stake in the Palestinian Authority in to the Palestinian Authority, PA, in 2018. But on June the 18th, 2023, Israel reversed its position, giving its preliminary consent to an agreement to develop the Gaza Marine between the PA and an Egyptian consortium, which includes the Egyptian State Gas Company, EGAS, and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, nevertheless stated that progress on the issue would depend on preserving the state of Israel's security and diplomatic needs, requiring security coordination between Cairo and Ramallah. It is illogical to believe that after 20 years of objection, Tel Aviv finally approved the development of the field, only to bomb Gaza 4 months later just to get its hands on it. What are Israel's gas capacities, needs and export plans? I'll tell you what the truth in a minute, people. In 2022, Israel produced 21.29 billion cubic metres of gas, of which 9.21 billion cubic metres was exported to Egypt and Jordan. Israel hopes to double its production over the next few years and enter new markets, particularly in Europe. How are they going to do that, people? Three reservoirs in the country are currently operational, Tamar, Leviathan and Karish. A new reserve, Olympus, was discovered in 2022. So it says the massive Leviathan field, which is 623 billion cubic meters, and the Tamar field, which is 200 billion cubic meters, are Israel's main gas resources. By comparison, the potential revenues from Gaza Marine, 32 billion cubic meters, are extremely minimal. Now, let's just go to Wikipedia and see how much reserves are actually at the Gaza Marine. They said 32 billion. The Gaza Marine, this is Wikipedia, Jimmy Wales, is a natural gas field off the coast of the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Marine natural gas field is located in waters about 36 kilometres offshore at a depth of 2,000 feet. The field was discovered in 2000 by the BG Group, estimated to contain, wait for it people, more than 1 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. As of the 18th of June 2023, the Israeli government gave preliminary approval for its development. I'm not going to read any more, okay? It's got, well, I'll just read the ownership part, but that's it. You can see it's completely debunked the other one, who tried so hard to drive you away from the idea that it's all about the gas. So it's got here in the Wikipedia, which is quite short. It's not a very long one. Ownership and access disputes. Israel and the Palestinian territories are situated in close proximity to several other countries. Lebanon and Syria are to the north, while Cyprus, an island that rests nearby in the Mediterranean Sea, is to the west, just below Turkey. To the south is Egypt, a major energy supplier to Israel. Notice it's a major energy supplier to Israel, not the other way around. The gas fields that lie under the Mediterranean do not conform to national borders. Lebanon and Egypt objected to Israel's claims to certain gas fields, and Israel has tightened ties with Cyprus over gas field negotiations. This is reality, people. Regionally, the discovery of gas fields has led to increased tension between these closely placed countries. Now we go to maritime law. Maritime law and Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories also complicates the question of who owns the Gaza Marine gas field. Although it is legally under the jurisdiction of the Palestinian Authority, as a result of the Oslo Accords, Israeli forces have prevented Palestinians physical access to the offshore region and its resources. Say no more, people. I mean, that is in black and white. That's the latest from Wikipedia that's gone up. They could change that. They could get rid of it. You know, there's tens of thousands of editors that go into these things and change them daily sometimes. But there it is. That's the black and white of it. That's why they're there. They let Hamas on October the 7th, which incidentally is Putin's birthday, invade, thinking that they had a leg in. And really, it was a false flag to let Israel decimate them. And that's what they're doing. And as soon as they decimate them, they'll go and get the oil this year. You'll see it. But by then, it's too late. Because what's happened is the New World Order is moving forward so fast, we can't keep up with it all. When the next pandemic hits, we're going to not know if we're left or right. I'm serious, people. Because we're going to be in such a numbing effect that people will not know how to respond. I'm serious. This is a dangerous, dangerous thing. Why do you think they just legalise euthanasia all over Australia and all around the world? Okay, listen to this story. I couldn't believe this one when I saw it. See if I can find it first. Okay, so this is just a quick story from BioEdge. BioEdge.org. It says, former Dutch Prime Minister and his wife die together in duo euthanasia. This came out February the 15th, 2024. They may have been the most publicised deaths in the history of euthanasia in the Netherlands. A former Prime Minister of the country and his wife, both aged 93, died together in a so-called duo euthanasia earlier this month. So there you go. I'm not going to read any more of the article, but they said here, it is likely this will happen more and more often. Rob Edens, press officer for the NVVE, a Dutch Right to Die lobby group, told the Washington Post, we still see a reluctance among doctors to provide euthanasia based on the accumulation of age-related conditions, but it is permitted. So wait till the crazies start with the next pandemic and that. What you're going to get are people just wanting to line up to kill themselves. They just will. They'll just go, I've had enough. I'm out of here. And that's exactly what they want you to do. So don't do it, because that's the whole point of why they're doing all these testing your patients with all these 20-minute cities and euthanasia and, you know, lockdowns and QR coding. This is what it's all about. It's meant to break you. You can't break, okay? We have to stick together through this. But you can see that the powers that be are really trying hard to change this world and turn it upside down and depopulate it. That's it. Very simple, people. All right, people, I've waffled way too long. And I'll talk about, see if I can get a more update on the COVID rats of Oz next week and maybe jump further into the Israeli thing and the Putin thing. Now, I don't normally talk about world events like that, but it is starting to impact because they've just announced that that jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny died at 47. The region's prison service says, this is abc.net.au, 16th of February 2024. And they're saying he died of sudden death syndrome, which is obviously sudden opposition to Putin syndrome. And that's going to spark now more money to the Ukraine to fight Russia. It's going to get public opinion on their side, and Zelensky will continue to get billions of dollars to kill more Ukrainians and Russians because no one wins that war. That's what happens. It ends up becoming Ukraine screaming for nuclear weapons as a last resort. You see how this is all nonsensical. But still, there it is. It's Putin's a bad guy. No, everyone, nobody rejects that. Everyone knows that's the truth. But at the same time, don't put NATO bases near Russia because Russia will respond and they will do what they've done. They don't care. So you poke the bear, that's what you get. So same with Israel. If they're going to go in and destroy the Palestinians to get the Gaza gas, it's going to become pretty obvious about that too. So this is what I'm saying. All these wrongs equaling a right are becoming what is real. Okay. The world is really very, very corrupt, people. I don't need to tell you that. There are not many of us left that want to see a truthful world. There is an agenda behind everything. It's very dangerous. The moniker, don't get caught. Anyway, people, I'll catch you all next week. This is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Sunday, the 18th of February, 2024. Thanks for listening. Over and...